This episode of the Out of Bounds podcast is brought to you by Fisher's Keys. Hello. This is episode number 108 of the Out of Bounds podcast. I'm Adam Jabber. I'm your host. And we've got another great episode. Well, I mean, this one's a great episode. I don't know how many of these have actually been great episodes. But anyway, this episode is with BMX legend, current pink bike illustrator, and all-around, and actually owner of Fairdale Bikes, and all-around great guy. From what I can tell, and from all accounts that I've ever heard, Taj Mihalik. Taj and I sat down over the internet and had a conversation about, you know, what his career has been like to this point, both on the BMX side, illustrating, being more involved in the mountain bike scene now, you know, working for Pink Bike, and a bunch of other awesome stuff. So be sure to check that out. If you get the opportunity, I just wanted to do a quick sponsor read before jumping into the episode. Today's sponsor is Fisher's Keys, who, as you know, is the sponsor for the whole show, basically. But I wanted to tell you about some of the products that they have that are going to make your life a lot easier this fall. For a lot of us, skiing came to a halt pretty early on in the 2020 portion of the ski season last year. So except for those of us who are ski touring and even still ski touring now. Wow, that was a mouthful. Fisher makes some of the best product out there right now as far as stuff that will allow you to ski down well and ski up well. Meaning it's lightweight, it's easy to use, functionality is a cornerstone, I guess, of what they do at Fisher. I ski mostly in that Ranger Free 130 boot. That boot is, I think, the best skiing uphill boot that exists. It's like a true 50-50 boot. You can do whatever you want with it as far as skiing downhill goes, but it's light enough to do any uphill, you know, no matter what the length is. I've had a great time using that boot. It's super easy to use. The walk mode is right above the top buckle. So it's just a quick flip of that. And then you're ready to go uphill or downhill, whichever way you're headed. I've enjoyed using that boot so much. It's light. Like I said, it's stiff. It actually flexes well. It doesn't have weird like pinch points. And it fits well. Like, I've got pretty fat feet and, you know, I can make that boot fit my foot great. They also make another version of it called the Ranger 1. Ranger 1 is basically the wider version of that boot. There's so many good products that they make for that. You can check out all their stuff on the Instagram at Fisher Ski, and then you can check it on the internet at www.fishersports.com. And if you have product questions, as always, feel free, hit me up. Ski season's coming. I mean, I know it's July and it's hot out there, but it's coming. It's coming soon. So get ready. We have no idea what's going to happen in the fall, obviously, as far as COVID-19 goes. It sounds like a lot of resorts are trying to make the necessary adjustments so that there is a ski season still. But who knows? I mean, shit can get weird, as we found out this past spring. So get your gear, go to your local shop, give a call, or shoot me a DM, and we can figure out what gear makes the most sense for you. So without further ado, this is episode number 108 with Taj Mihalik. Be sure to follow him on Instagram at Taj Lucas. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at Out of Podcast. Same thing with the YouTube, same thing with the Twitter, all those things. Hit us up and we'll talk to you guys after this. Thanks. Well, Taj, why don't you tell people who you are and tell them a little bit about yourself?
Sure. My name's Taj. I'm an illustrator now. Cartoonist, I guess. Somewhere in the middle of those two, probably. That's about it these days.
What did you do previous, I guess? What led you to this point?
Oh, so I was a BMX pro for, I guess, 18 years. Then at the end of my BMX riding, I started Faraday Bikes. And then there's my cat. I got to here. I don't know. I kind of decided to move up to the woods and just find a, like, quieter, slower pace of life. Left Austin, Texas, and kind of stepped away from a lot of the business side of stuff and just concentrated on drawing stuff.
Yeah. What was the transition like? I actually, like, I had watched that. You did, like, a piece, I think it was a couple years ago, about, like, life after BMX. So I've seen that, and I'll try to include a link in the show notes, but what has it been like trying to, like, figure things out? And I mean, obviously with Faraday, like, things are probably pretty good right now, but they're not always good, like, in the bike industry. It takes a while for things to get going. So what has that been like?
So Pink Bike just reposted that video. It's about 3 years old, and it's kind of heavy for me to watch. Like, I actually, if anybody does watch it, I feel like I look really sad in that video, and I am, but it's not for the reason it comes across in the video. I'm not sad because I, like, left BMX at that time. That was sort of just natural, you know, but we filmed that the day after Dave Mira committed suicide, which was really heavy, you know, like, and I can remember the interviewer was driving up to interview me, and the subject was life after pro. And I'm thinking to myself, what am I going to say? And I actually was going to say, unless you're Dave Mira, life after pro can be kind of hard. Imagining that he had everything figured out and had money and he had family, right. It just seemed like he had it all dialed. And it was really shocking, you know? And so that whole interview, I'm kind of like processing that. We both were. And I don't know. So if you watch that, that's the kind of backstory of me looking probably a lot more emotional than I really was.
Yeah.
I was 36 years old when I had my kind of career ending back surgery, and I was ready to do something different. I mean, I wanted to keep riding BMX, but I was ready to stop being a pro. It was getting to the point where, like, you know, they'd be like, hey, we want to take in this really cool trip to Japan and do all this rad stuff. And I'd just be like, I don't want to go. You know, I was just so jaded and burned out on, like, the travel side. I still like the riding, but I think I didn't want it to be a job anymore. So I was pretty close to making that transition on my own. But the injury and the surgery kind of made it a choice I didn't have to make, you know, it was made for me.
Right.
Anyway, yeah, it was kind of tough. Like, I, you know, one day I was just a bum riding bikes all day, every day. And the next day I was super in debt and didn't have a job. And it got kind of scary. I almost lost my house because I had all these, you know, the surgery was super expensive. And but then Odyssey BMX moved to town, to Austin, and they just hired me to come work there. And I don't know, that was a weird transition, like going from riding bikes all day to sitting at a desk all day.
Yeah.
I mean, that's tough on your body. And, so
it's gotta be kind of tough on your mental too. Like, to be like, oh, like, I was a pro and, like, yeah, I was jaded or whatever, but, like, to now be sitting at a desk, like, fielding phone calls is, like, gotta be,
yeah, I mean,
weird.
So I mean, I was jaded on the travel, but I loved riding bikes. That part never slacked. But I think what it was, yeah, I mean, you're kind of like, I mean, I was a BMXer. I just totally defined myself with that trait, and then all of a sudden I'm not, and kind of floundered. And what I did initially, which was really unhealthy, is I just decided, well, I'm gonna apply all this focus I had on this one single thing that I did my whole life to this new single thing. And it just ate me up, you know, like, I just, all I did is work and think about work. And it was sort of really unhealthy way to approach it. You know, I didn't, like, go to work 8 hours a day. I was just, like, obsessed over stuff. Cause that's when we started Faraday. They let me create Faraday. And I kind of burned myself out pretty quickly. Approached the way I approached riding. Cause it, it's cool and it's fulfilling, but it's not the same, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's not like part of the reason that you can become so obsessed, I would imagine, with, you know, with BMX and riding bikes, because you actually love it. Like, you really, so you can't like make yourself love a thing, like just going to work.
Yeah. I mean, it was just, it was like everything. It was my creativity and my exercise and my friends, and you can't, yeah, it's not healthy to do the same thing when it's a job. Like, right. And it's, especially it's like, you know, a company I didn't own, and, you know, it is really cool. I'm still part of it in a way, but I made it into this way more stressful thing than it should have been.
Right. So what was it like starting Fairdale? I mean, what was the intention, I guess, behind it?
So it's, how can I make this not 2 hours long? So towards the end of my riding in BMX, I was having all these back issues that I eventually got the surgery for, and I was fighting getting the surgery, trying everything else. But in that period, I literally picked up a bike out of a dumpster, some grandma bike with a basket on it, and I fixed it up and I started riding at the grocery store. And I'd never done that. I'd never ridden anything but a BMX bike. And I fell in love with it. I was like, holy shit, like just riding to the grocery store through the neighborhood at like walking pace is fun. Like, I actually enjoy this. And in a way, it clicked in my mind that this is sort of like at the base of everything I loved about BMX. Like, sure, you're pushing it further and you're jumping farther and you're going faster, but somewhere along the line, what I really liked was just coasting on two wheels. There's something cool about that. So then is when I had this really brief stint riding for Giant, which was a very weird move for me, because I always rode for like really core companies.
Yeah.
And to ride for a Giant was really out of the blue. But the concept originally was that I was going to go to all these cycling events, go to road racing events, go to mountain bike events, and just kind of experience the whole new world of cycling and maybe like document it for them. That was sort of where I was headed with that. It never materialized. But basically, because I couldn't ride BMX all the time, I was starting to just realize I liked bikes of all kinds. So that sort of opened my mind. And then when I got to Odyssey, I was like riding to work one day and just came in the office. I was like, man, I wish there was a bike that was like this.
Yeah.
And they just kind of said, well, let's make it. And that was Fairdale. Like, it just started from something as simple as that.
Yeah. And that's what the bikes seem like, I guess. So for people that aren't familiar, like all the Fairdale stuff, like kind of, it's not big bike brand kind of bikes, really. Like, they're not a bike that you would see in a lineup necessarily. You might, like, I mean, it's Fairdale Flyer. That's the drop bar bike, right? Like, I mean, those are, you might see something like that, but they're cool. They have attention to detail. They use parts that wouldn't be you wouldn't see necessarily on a stock build. I mean, this stuff is just, it's rad.
Yeah, I think, I mean, our approach in the beginning was, we were looking at all the big brands and it felt like you'd see their top line racing bike, $10,000, and then make a $5,000 version, and then make a $3,000 version, and then make a $1,000 version. You kept just watering it down. So you got this kind of pile of junk that was like a $500 version of a $10,000 bike, and it just didn't work.
Right.
So we kind of decided to start the other way. Like, let's make, you know, we can make a BMX bike that you can jump off a house for $500. It's indestructible. Why can't we make a bike that you can ride down the street for $500? And so we kind of approached it that way and designed the bikes using, I don't know, I call it BMX sensibilities, in that we kind of tried to keep it simple and low maintenance and just kind of be fun to ride the same way I was enjoying riding this bike I found in the dumpster, you know?
Mm. Yeah. And we were kind of talking about this before, like, it kind of bridges the gap, I guess, in a way that a lot of other brands don't necessarily, like, because it makes it cool, I guess, to ride a different kind of bike, right? Like, they're cool bikes still, even if they're not a BMX bike. Like, the stigma has always been like, BMX bikes are cool, everything else is kind of lame. Like, that's how it was when I was growing up too. Like, basically, BMX bike is your gateway drug to regular bikes, but for so many people that doesn't translate until like they have like a real job and real money, and then they can buy a cool bike, and then like, and then they either get into it or they don't, you know. But as kids, I guess you just don't see that as much, unless it's like wealthy kid, wealthy family, dad buys him cool bike, you know?
I guess so. I mean, BMX or me wanted nothing to do with the cycling world. I wanted to not even be called a bicycle. I wanted it to be its own thing, you know? I remember actually Chris Muller, the owner of S&M, kind of one time I was venting about that. Like, why are we even sold in bike shops? It doesn't make any sense. We have nothing to do with cycling. And he kind of was like, you're never getting away from that. It's always bikes. Like, that's who makes the tires. That's who makes the tubes. That's who makes all the parts. And like, and it kind of made me try to think about BMX a little more as cycling and a little less. It's like some private island that, that it isn't. But, you know, it took me a long time to really appreciate riding other bikes. That's for sure.
Yeah. And now you're riding other bikes, obviously.
Yeah. Now I realize, definitely. I love all kinds of bikes.
Yeah. What are you on most often? Like, are you riding mountain bike the most? Are you just like riding the townie the most? Like, what are you into?
Yeah. So I live way up in the woods, and right out my back door is a trail network that's run by a local university. So I ride mountain bikes a lot. You know, I have our gravel bike and it in my basket bike, which I cruise around, but it's mountain bikes all the time.
Yeah. What are you riding?
I got a Chromag Stylus.
Sick.
Yeah.
And that's funny because like that's kind of like a BMX bike and a mountain bike shell, right? Like it's fun, it's playful, it's like not a ton of frills. I mean, obviously more than a BMX bike, but it's still pretty simple.
It is. And I've had a few full suspension bikes and I can't fall in love with them even though I understand them. Well, when I get on those big full suspension bikes, I feel like I'm not using all the skills I developed over, 30 years of my life riding BMX. I kind of don't need them as much. And I don't know. I'm not trying to go as fast as I can go. I don't want to get hurt anymore. I want to just ride and enjoy it. But I like being able to use those skills. So hardtail, you get to kind of scratch that itch and still do some BMX-y stuff. I don't know. That's why I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, it makes sense. How do you think BMX is right? I know this is a super general question, but like, I feel like from the shop perspective, like BMX is kind of like in a weird spot right now where like we're not getting the same amount of people, at least in our shop, that are like, oh, I want a new BMX bike, like on that daily basis. Like, is that the same? Like, have you seen a similar trend, I guess, across BMX? Like, it seems like, I don't know. It seems like kids are getting more and more into just like, if they're going to ride a bike, they just kind of want a bike to go ride to their friend's house. And that used to always be a BMX bike. And now it seems like that's kind of dying off a bit.
I'm so out of touch. I really couldn't say.
Yeah.
I don't really know what to say. I know that like, so Odyssey is also Fairdale Bikes and also Sunday Bikes, and Sunday's doing well. But I don't know how the market works anymore for sure. I mean, it's BMX bikes have gotten so simple and dialed now.
Yeah. That part's way better. I mean, that's without a doubt, whether you're like, even just looking at it from afar, I mean, they're way better than they were.
Like, yeah, they are.
Even a few years ago, for sure. It's just interesting to see, I guess. And I guess the other thing too is like everybody's riding like those 26-inch cruiser bikes, or they're riding like the SE bikes. Like all the kids in the neighborhood that like used to be riding BMX bikes are now on those things. And it's like, it's a good and a bad thing, right? Because like every kid is now, they're not, I don't know. I guess it's just a good thing, right? Like kids are on bikes. Better I think than, that's a good thing.
Better than fixed gears, isn't it?
It definitely is, but especially like if you live anywhere that like has any kind of hills, like I don't know why people do the fixed gear thing. I'm out on it completely.
Yeah, the wheelie bike thing is an anomaly. That's interesting. I mean, I don't know. It seems pretty much like a fad, but it gets people into bikes and people are having fun on bikes, so I'm all for it.
Yeah, we get 1,000 calls a day for like, and we don't sell them, so like it is what it is. But like, and we're definitely, if there's a shop that hates on it, it's definitely us. Like I've always said from the beginning, like we're never going to bring them in. We're never going to be bringing in those SE bike things. And it's mostly because they're just like, they used to be cool, and then they kind of like slapped a bunch of price point models together, and they were like, cool kids like this because the colors are cool, and they got big goofy tires and all this stuff. So
yeah, when I moved to Austin, Texas in 93, I think, there was this punk rock bike shop that used to build bikes for the students because they're a big university there. And they, so what they would do is build BMX cruisers, like 24 inch racing cruisers from the early 90s. And it made sense. They were like totally bulletproof. You couldn't screw them out. Give them to a student. He could just, you know, throw it wherever and it would just work the next day. And it was really weird because in 93 people weren't riding BMX bikes around, but in that University of Texas, there was all these people riding BMX bikes around. I thought it was super cool, which is actually what led to building my bike, because I was trying to capture some of that. Like,
yeah,
the Taj model is like that same theory, just really simple, bulletproof BMX that you can ride around on.
Which is why I like it. And I guess it's like a weird distinction, because like on one hand, I'm talking shit about SE bikes, but at the same time, I'm like, yeah, that bike is cool. And I think the reason I think it's cool is because it's built with like the intent of being super durable, and the other one's built, I shouldn't just be shitting on them, I guess, but the other one's built for like just for the colors and the style of it and the culture of it. And I guess, I don't know. I just don't get it as much, I guess. Maybe I'm just a hater.
Yeah. Well, it's a different scene.
Yeah. It's a totally different thing for sure.
I mean, I don't know. Some people ask me like if my bike's good for wheelies, and I'm kind of like, I don't know how to answer that. Oh, but I mean, it's cool. Whatever. There's people that are riding SEs that are going to get into bikes, and they're going to keep going on bikes. That's awesome.
Right.
What SE's done is amazing. Like, they've just created this entire world of riding that didn't exist. Like, it's wild.
They've created a monster for sure. Like, for good, for better, for worse, they're doing something good, I think, for the overall industry, because it is making people more aware of bikes.
Yeah.
So, how has like the recent surge of people getting into bikes and mountain biking and the interest in bikes, like it's at an all time high right now across the country. Have you seen any of that, like where you are, like in your involvement in the industry?
Well, in my little town, the shop here, yeah, they just had record sales, and they have trouble getting bikes in, and which is awesome, because you know, everybody was holed up for so long, there was no action, they were really scared. Fairdale ordered like more than normal this year, just by chance. They all kind of came in right when stuff started to unlock, and they sold out in like days. Like, it was amazing.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah.
I'm trying to ditch the cat here. Yeah.
Let's go. Taj has a blind cat. That's very loud. For people that are like wondering what's going on, like who's screaming in the background.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No, you're good. So you've been working a lot with Pink Bike lately, and a lot on your art in general, it seems like. How did that start? How'd you get into like doing cartoons and drawing?
Okay. Well, I always kind of drew, and then when I really started focusing on writing, I kind of hung it up just to focus on writing. I started getting into a lot more after the surgery. I have all this creativity that I was throwing at bikes. I had nowhere to throw it. So I just started drawing a lot, and it became really satisfying. And then, actually, I mentioned that interview and Dave Mira's passing, and it was 2 weeks after that where I was like, you know what? I'm going to just step back from everything and just try to make a go at drawing. And bicycling started. I was working for bicycling before Pink Bike, and they started paying me, and I started getting freelance jobs, and it just all happened without me really trying, but I absolutely love it. It's turned into my riding. I treat it the same way as riding. I'll go into every project and I start drawing, and half the time I get myself into a bit of a hole. I don't know if it's going to work. I'm going to like have to scrap the whole thing and crash. And I try something new every time, even if it's subtle. So it's super satisfying. It reminds me so much of bike riding in a, you know, different way, but it's got the same sort of fulfilling side to it.
Do you have the same motivation to go out? Like when you were trying to learn a new trick or trying to get something dialed or like trying to make something feel right on the bike, do you have the same kind of feeling, I guess, when you like, when you figure that out, like in a drawing, like when something links up and you're like, oh, this is funny. Or like, oh, this is like, this makes sense.
Yeah. It's yeah. I mean, it's a job, so I got to please somebody down the line, but it's also pretty personal where a lot of times I really am just laughing to myself in my house alone drawing. And that's awesome. Like I'm really happy with that. And yeah, it's similar to writing too. Like I kind of can't wait to wake up the next day and work on it again, you know, like
that's awesome.
It's pretty neat.
How did you like, where did the ideas for the characters come? Like why a bunny rabbit and why like your dog is like wicked cute. So like that one's like, I'll not ask about that one because that's an easy one to like draw. What are the other characters? Like, did you have some kind of inspiration for these ones?
Not really. The rabbit I've been drawing for ever. Like he was my character on a UGP shirt and then he'd be kind of, you know, drew him a lot for Terrible One when we were doing that company, and he's just my go-to. I don't know. I like the idea of a rabbit having a voice because they don't normally. I don't know. This is kind of dark, but I'll tell you the real story.
As please, yeah.
Kid, there was a lot of, I feel like a lot of my friends, like we're talking like third grade or something, would get pet rabbits. And just because they were cute, but nobody knew what to do with a rabbit. They didn't want it in your house. And so they'd build it, these like boxes out in their yard and then it would just freeze to death and they'd just get rid of it. And I saw so many of my friends just like neglect these animals and it was really terrible. So I wanted to give them a voice. Like what would they say if they could, if they had any power at all to say anything or change anything? And so it's become, that's why it's become my character. I'm going to put the cat downstairs.
Okay.
I don't like the cat. The rabbits are cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry about that again.
No, you're good. So what's the cat situation? Can we talk about this for a second? Like what you picked, you got this cat, like it was a rescue. Did you know it was blind when you rescued it?
Yeah. So she's a Bengal. She's really pretty, really soft. But probably the result of some inbreeding, because they're also really expensive.
Yeah.
And, that's one of the side effects of that is blindness. But she's super cool. I mean,
yeah,
it's really entertaining to like watch her interact with my dog and just the way she handles things, not being able to see.
Yeah.
Just really talkative though. Like really wants attention. And whenever I'm doing video chat, she comes on to do some screaming.
How was that relationship out of the get? Like, did the dog and the cat get along?
The dog Monty's super gentle. Yeah. He's fine with her.
Yeah. Good. How come the cat's not in any of the artwork? That's the real question here.
She's in some. I always draw her with dark glasses to signify that she's blind.
Yeah.
All
right. I got some questions for you from some listeners of the show. All right. Somebody named Tumbers wants to know, it's kind of a long question and I'm not that good at reading, so we'll see how this comes out. All right, question for Taj. Has mountain bike replaced or at least equaled BMX for you? I love BMX and will always see it as that, but I can't deny that seeing MTB crews out there the same way that BMX crews were out there before, like the 50-1 crew and other examples. Does that, like, do you feel like they're tapping into an area that's missing in BMX? That's kind of a weirdly worded question, but I get what he's saying, I think.
Yeah, I think I do too. But honestly, I don't pay attention to this stuff. I've heard of that, and I think I've maybe seen one of their videos, but it's totally not
not on your radar.
Yeah, like it doesn't replace BMX in any way except that I get to ride a bike, get to get in the air a little bit, you know, but BMX was constantly searching for something new. Everywhere I went, everywhere I looked, I was, you know, could I ride this? Could I do that? Could I make up something here? And mountain biking is just, I get to go out in the woods and make motorcycle noises and go down hills. It's actually, I mean, it's really, it's what, how I started out riding when I was like 8 years old and didn't know what BMX was. I just go as fast as I could through trails and hit jumps. And it's, you know, going back to basics for me. I have no interest in racing or, you know, I'm 46 years old and kind of fat. I have no interest in trying to like push myself to do crazy tricks anymore. I just want to have fun and ride bikes. And I enjoy that a little adrenaline rush going extra fast, but it's just fun.
Yeah. It's a good time.
So much simpler than BMX, which was also fun, but was also everything else, you know, it was
right.
Putting my emotions into it and creativity and all my thoughts and time. And I don't know. Yeah.
I guess there's got to be less pressure on it too, right? Like you're just out in the woods and you're hanging out. You know?
There's no pressure, no pressure at all. I catch myself sometimes, you know, paying attention to my Strava times, and I realized like there was like one trail I really wanted to be the fastest on, and I was out there sprinting my brains out. It was like against, you know, a good rider, but like a full-time college student that probably started riding like 2 years ago. And it was just ridiculous. I had to kind of check my ego and be like, calm down. I'm not competing anymore. So
I kind of feel like a lot of people need their ego checked on Strava. Like Strava's the big thing. And it's like, everybody loves to shit on it, but everybody also loves to use it for what it is.
Yeah.
Because there's so many like Strava chasers out in the world. Like
I think it's a good laugh, and I think it's,
I love it,
a lot of fun. If I took it too seriously, I would not like myself for sure.
Yeah, for sure. It's not that serious. Like a buddy of mine has this shirt that says Strava is not racing. And it's like, it's super true. Like there's so many people out there that are like, if I don't get a good Strava time, like what's the point of even riding? Like, or they're like literally not want to go riding if they forget their phone or something, you know? And I think that's kind of a bummer, but
yeah, I actually used it the way you're supposed to use it at first, where I would go do a couple loops. I didn't even realize that other people's times were even on there for a while. And yeah. I would just try to, you know, I could go 30 seconds faster than my last time. And it was just like getting me in shape. So that's cool. And then, you know, I don't know. I think it's fun when it's like a couple of your friends and you're kind of pushing each other, but I don't, yeah, whatever.
Are you going to get the paid version?
I don't yet. No.
I don't know. I'm like a little conflicted. I feel like it's a good idea to support them because like it is like, it's still the cycling world and the like, whatever else Strava's involved with. Like, I feel like paying, especially as little as they want, is not a bad thing, I guess.
Yeah. But then you'd have to admit that you were using it, even though
you have to admit that you're using it. And you also have to be like, yeah, like I'm going to pay for all this stuff that like you basically don't need any of the paid or premium features. You're just paying for it because you want to know where you're at in the like in the scheme of things, like in terms of like best times ever. That's really the only thing that like they're taking away, which is why it's interesting. I think I almost, because I use it so often, like I use it on basically every ride, like even if I'm just like riding down the street, because I kind of want to know what I'm doing for miles in a week more than anything. I almost feel obligated, I guess.
Yeah, I kind of do too. I mean, it's pretty cool. It is somewhat motivating to like, I don't know. It's cool to see you rode 100 miles this week or something. You know?
Right. And to see that your buddy, that's one of the most motivating things, is like to see that your buddy went out and did like a big ride and you're like, shit, like, oh, he did a ride. I got to go do a ride now. Like, that's like at least how my brain works. I think it's like, I see somebody else do it that I know. And I'm like, I can do that too. I should do more. I got to ride more.
Yeah, I'm astounded at how much some of my friends ride when I look at it. It's amazing.
Yeah, just time. That's all it is. All right. Let's see what we got here. Couple people with not a question, but still have one of the first barcode frames. Yeah. Let's see. B Podmore wants to know, biggest artistic inspiration. Do you have one?
Huh, I never thought of that. I mean, we had Michael Sieben working for us for a while at T1, and I loved his stuff. Just a really good, I mean, really funny. He's got such a good sense of humor, but really rad, like, I don't know, balance of sort of art in that he's like putting some of himself into it, but also kind of, I don't know what the word is, like, not cartoony, but not commercial, but like, not like so such high level art that you don't understand it. Kind of still like just really cool and fun to look at. There's more in it, but I don't know. I've always loved Michael's stuff, and getting to work with him was really cool. Definitely, I'm sure it's to me, it's pretty obvious the stuff that I learned. It kind of, sometimes I worry my stuff looks too much like his sometimes. But I think I've kind of steered myself away from his style enough.
Yeah. Well, I haven't heard anything about that, so I think you're doing okay. Not that I would know, but, you know. Ryan Murphy wants to know, how is it working with Pinkbike?
I just signed another year contract. There was a little lull there during the kind of lockdown, COVID's worst part, where I was sort of in limbo and just doing a few things for them. I did a year solid of weekly cartoons, and that was really fun, although it was kind of exhausting. Like, I kind of spent a lot more time than I should have trying to think of ideas. You know, it kind of became all consuming. Like, what am I going to do by Friday? But it was cool, fun to do. And now I'm doing a bit more editorial pieces and just like one comic a month. And that's awesome. I actually really, really enjoy all those guys. And I got to go hang out at their field test in Whistler or in Pemberton last year. And
sick.
Everybody was awesome. Like, really great group of people. And it's super fun to hang out with, super fun to work with them. So it's great.
That's good to hear, I guess, because a lot of times with, like, especially in whether it's ski or bike, people don't really know the personalities behind these media conglomerates, I guess. So, like, they don't really know, like, if they're cool people. Like, they're just like, they're using the service that they offer and like kind of wondering what's behind those doors. So I guess it's cool to hear that they're cool.
I've been really lucky with that stuff. I, you know, when I worked at Bicycling, I worked with really cool people. And I only had a couple of contacts there, but they were great. And then I just finished a big project with Ant Hill Films, and everybody there was awesome. Yeah, it's pretty cool to work for cool people and work with cool people.
The last question is from Eastern Adventure. Want to know, how do you vet some of your ideas, and do you vet some of your ideas for content?
I'm notoriously bad at that, just kind of running stuff that made me laugh. So good luck. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, occasionally I'll bounce stuff off people, or I'll feel like I really need to. But mostly, I mean, that's kind of the fun of doing this, is I just kind of do what I enjoy, and here you go, world. Good luck with it. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but it's usually not terribly negative. So
yeah.
I keep going that way.
Have you ever had anybody that's been like really, like, I don't think you do any stuff that's like offensive in any way, but does anybody get butthurt about the comics that you're making? Like, is anybody like shooting emails like, come on, dude, that bunny with that poster is like, is not very funny. Like,
well, so for, I think all those comics I did that entire year, I never read the comments at Pinkbike. Because I think the very first one I did, people, you know, it's Pinkbike. And now I kind of get it. Everybody makes fun of everything. And that's half the fun of going on Pinkbike. But someone was like, oh, there's some people saying some bad stuff on that one. And so I just never looked at it. And then I just never looked at any of them. I finally looked at one or two recently, and everything was so nice. Like, a couple people were a little smart ass, but it was actually really, really nice. And I kind of feel bad that I, you know, there's all these years worth of comments I never looked at. But I had to block one person. I did this comic. It was just on my Instagram, and it was about clipless pedals and flat pedals. And the joke was that clipless pedals are the ones with clips.
Yeah.
And of course, 30 people need to explain that the reason they're called clipless pedals is because they used to have toe clips, now they're removed and whatever. But this, some guy got so bent out of shape, just like wanted me to take it down, and I was going to confuse people. And it was nuts. Like, it was the most unoffensive thing you could have. But generally, I don't have any problems with that stuff.
Yeah, I would imagine, like, I would imagine you take that stuff kind of personal, right? Because it's your artwork. Like, it's stuff you made. Like, so I guess I kind of get why it would be hard to look at the comments, because you almost don't want to read that stuff. Like, you don't want to see that because you don't want people's negative opinion. And I guess you don't really want people, like, you don't want to drink your own Kool-Aid kind of too. Like, you don't want to be like, I'm the man. I make the best cartoons out there. Like, I'm like, you know, you don't want to do that either.
No. I mean, I learned that in writing. Same thing. You know, it's awesome to have people tell you great or tell you suck, but you gotta take it with a grain of salt and stick with doing what feels right to you.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you for doing this, dude. This has been awesome.
That was quick.
Yeah.
I guess it was. That was an hour, but it felt quick.
Yeah, that's it. It's about as easy as it can be. Like, it's not very complicated, and especially, like, you're welcome to come back on at any time, but, like, this is just, like, the first time I have anybody on. It's just, like, people kind of get to know you, they get a feel for you a little bit, and it also, like, it's mainly to help you get comfortable with me as a host, too, so, like, it doesn't feel weird if we ever do another one at some point, you know?
Well, thank you very much for having me. That was fun.
Where can people find your stuff online and on Instagram?
Well, Instagram is Taj Lucas, TAJLUCAS, and there's a TajMihelic.com, or just search my name on Pink Bike. I guess there's loads of stuff on there.
Yeah.
Or on Outside TV, the new Ant Hill show. What is it called again? Return to Earth, the series. I did a bunch of animation for them.
Yeah.
I worked on that all winter. I'm pretty stoked on that stuff. The first three episodes are out, and there's like two more coming. But that's on Outside TV, whatever that is.
Yeah. Awesome. I'll try to find. I'll hit you up, and I'll get the actual links and stuff, and we'll put it in the show notes afterwards. So appreciate that, dude. That was episode number 108 with Taj Mihelic. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I did a ton. Taj is awesome. I've been a fan of his work for a long time, so I'm glad I got to actually sit down and have a conversation with him. Let us know what you thought of the episode. Shoot me an email, adam@outofpodcast.com. Also, shoot us a DM. Just interact with us. Let us know what kind of content you'd like to see, too. Also, that word content. LOL. Yeah, hit me up. We will talk to you guys next week. Who do I have next week? Oh, yeah. Roy Tuscany on e-bikes. Talk to you guys then. See ya. Bye.